host for Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Working with me is Station Manager Mike Murphy. Well, let's get this gloomy day lit up a little bit with Dennis Ross with the news.
The state legislature's logjam starts to break up. Allegations that several rides at Adventureland in Altoona had safety problems. And why did that Iowa student literally hit the ceiling at school? That and much more made news around the state last week. First, the state legislature. The logjam that had held up action in the state House and Senate for more than a week broke up, at least for a while. Lawmakers passed a bill requiring most gas stations to offer gasoline with higher blends of ethanol at the pump. It would require gas stations and other fuel retailers to offer gasoline with 15% ethanol, known as E15, starting in 2026. Right now, E15 is available at a fraction of Iowa's gas stations and truck stops. The measure passed on a bipartisan vote in both chambers. The bill will add any gas station that sells less than 300,000 gallons of gas a year to receive a waiver from the E15 requirement if the station's owner owns 10 or fewer stations, and if the station has not previously sold E15. There are 575 gas stations in the state that sold less than 300,000 gallons of gas in 2020, amounting to less than 6% of the gas sold in the state that year. After the legislature's move on ethanol, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency issued a temporary waiver to let gas stations sell E15. This coming just days after Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and seven other Midwestern governors had sent a letter to the federal government seeking a waiver to allow the year-round sale of gasoline with 15% ethanol. Meanwhile, last week, Iowa House and Senate Republicans also gave final passage to a proposal to cut jobless benefits 10 weeks earlier. Jobless benefits used to last 26 weeks in Iowa. They will now last a maximum of 16. The bill now goes to the governor for her signature. It had been blocked in the legislature until the chambers agreed not to add a one-week waiting period before jobless workers could start collecting benefits. Democrats opposed it, calling it another slap in the face for Iowa workers. And last week, state lawmakers passed a bill that would let 16-year-olds work alone in child care centers and would let adult staff members care for more young children at those facilities. The legislation raises the maximum child-to-staff ratios at child care centers for 2- and 3-year-olds. One worker at a child care center could supervise 7 2-year-olds, up from 6, and one worker could supervise 10 3-year-olds, up from 8. But after all this action, state lawmakers were sent home to await further instructions, with key issues such as the state budget still needing to be resolved before this legislative session can end. In other news last week, word that three Iowans were among the first to have their sentences commuted by President Biden. Last Tuesday, the president announced he had commuted the sentences for 75 people around the nation who had been convicted of nonviolent federal drug offenses. Included are Douglas Dean Johnson of Dickens in Clay County, Edwin Tierney of Council Bluffs, and Andrea Zavala of Waterloo. There was also word last week that Iowa was sending 300,000 meals to Ukraine. Those meals will join another 30,000 sent earlier in the month through a partnership with Meals of the Heartland, a faith-based Iowa nonprofit. The weather also made news in Iowa last week, but not quite in the way it had the week before, when heavy thunderstorms had brought tornado warnings to part of the state. Still, last week's weather had wind and rain and thunderstorms and cold temperatures, some really cold temperatures. At least 4 Iowa cities set daily record low temperatures last Tuesday. How cold was it? Well, Cedar Rapids hit 22 degrees and broke its old record for April 26th, which had been 24 degrees. Sioux City hit a record low of 25 degrees last Tuesday, breaking its previous low of 26. Ottumwa hit 26, breaking its old record for that day, which had been 29. And Burlington went down to 30 degrees. Its previous low for that day was 31. So now you know. Meanwhile, still on the weather front, word that this spring's mix of snow, rain, and record low temperatures had stalled planting for the state's 86,000 farmers. Last year, by this time, they'd been able to plant 20% of their corn and 6% of their soybeans. Now it's only about 7% of corn acreage and 3% of soybeans that have gone into the ground. It's the state's slowest corn planting pace since 2013. But experts say once farmers start planting, they can seed the state's more than 12 million acres of corn and 10 million acres of soybeans within a few weeks. Farmers have until about the second week of May to plant corn without losing yield, and soybeans can be planted until late May or early June. Also last week, the Des Moines Register reported what a former rides manager at Adventureland in Altoona had told state investigators who were looking into last summer's fatal accident on the amusement park's Raging River Ride. In a telephone interview, Melvin McCollum told the State Division of Labor that the spinning teacups ride at Adventureland was propped up by bits of 2x4s. He said the falling star leaked oil and started on fire. He said access hatches had propped open the lighthouse drop tower, that safety restraints on the Outlaw and Tornado roller coasters broke, and that bolts came out of the Himalaya coaster all the time. And McCollum said Adventureland maintenance crews were, in his words, using duct tape and bubble gum, basically to keep those rides afloat. A lawyer for the park's then-owners disputes those allegations, saying, in his words, these uninformed, sensational comments by Mr. McCollum are untrue. Also last week, Hy-Vee announced that it intended to cut 500 employees from its offices. The West Des Moines-based grocery chain said those office employees will be asked to relocate to retail stores across the company's 8-state portfolio. They will be offered incentives and moving bonuses to move to stores that have open retail management positions. Hy-Vee operates more than 285 stores and is in the process of expanding into Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Indiana. There was also word last week that Wells Fargo had confirmed it had laid off home lending division employees after its mortgage business declined amid rising interest rates. The cuts came a week after Wells Fargo had announced a big drop-off in mortgage originations. Now for the coronavirus. The State Department of Public Health reported that new reported virus cases and hospitalizations had both gone up in Iowa last week. 84 people were hospitalized with the coronavirus in Iowa, up from 63 the week before. New reported virus cases in the state had gone up to 1,716 last week, an average of 245 per day. That's the most since early March. The new cases are overwhelmingly being caused by the Omicron variant of the virus. 99% of all positive tests are from that variant. And there were 19 more reported deaths caused by the virus in Iowa, bringing the death toll to 9,529 since the pandemic started. In the nation's capital last week, executives from the four major meatpacking companies told a congressional committee they did not fix prices, that their record profits were due to market conditions caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The four companies, Cargill, JBS, Tyson, and National Beef Packing, process about 85% of the country's beef supply. Also last week, word that protests over the mass destruction of chickens on an Iowa farm had been repeatedly disrupting Minnesota Timberwolves' postseason NBA games. In one game, a spectator seated in the second row behind the Timberwolves' bench ran onto the court in the middle of a play. At another game, an animal rights protester glued her hand to the hardwood along the baseline before security pried her away. And at yet another game, a woman chained herself to the back of the basket and threw flyers onto the court. All of this, an effort by the group Direct Action Everywhere against Glenn Taylor, the majority owner of the Timberwolves, who is a director at an egg-producing facility in Buena Vista County in Iowa. That facility has had to kill millions of laying hens because of the bird flu outbreak. The protest group says the methods of killing the birds are cruel. On the education front last week, word that an Iowa high school planned to install vape sensors in all its bathrooms. The Fort Dodge School Board approved a plan to spend about $17,000 on the sensors. If students try to vape in a bathroom, the sensors will detect it and send a message to staff members. Vaping is the practice of inhaling and exhaling vapor containing nicotine created by an electronic cigarette or other device. In the West Des Moines School District last week, word that more school employees there will get a bonus. The school board voted to extend $1,000 retention bonuses to the entire staff. Earlier, Governor Reynolds had given those bonuses to full-time classroom teachers. The West Des Moines District hopes the payments will keep the district's staffing shortage from growing worse. Still in West Des Moines, there was a report that a failed attempt to make a funny social media video could be costly for some high school students. KCCI-TV reported that a group of students at Valley Southwoods had tossed another student into the air at school a few days earlier. The goal was for the airborne student to do a flip once he was tossed into the air, a flip that would be recorded and posted on social media. Well, the student ended up hitting the ceiling and causing damage. Fortunately, no one was injured. School district officials decided not to formally discipline the students, but planned to make all 11 students involved equally cover the cost of fixing the damage to the ceiling. And just days after KCCI had reported that, the station ran another story that reported the same stunt had been tried by students at Stillwell Junior High in West Des Moines. No word on what the district planned to do about that incident. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. And no one has ever tossed me into a ceiling. Making my way out of here now, but planning to make my way right back into KHOI tonight, live at 7 for Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will hash out what's been going on in Iowa politics and why. It's your one-stop source for everything political here in the state. Then I'll come back to Local Talk on Friday morning at 7 with word on what's been making news in Ames. All that will keep me busy, and I hope you have a busy, healthy, and happy week.
Well, we're going to be talking to Katrina Williams, who is an Ames Middle School math teacher who's been nationally recognized for her teaching abilities. Ms. Williams was named one of 5 winners across the U.S. of the Trailblazing STEM Educator Award made by the Challenger Center and the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. And the goal was to recognize teachers who go above and beyond to inspire the next generation of explorers in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Congratulations, Ms. Williams.
Thank you so much.
What can you tell us about the award?
Well, the award is fascinating. I am thrilled to share with you all that it did come with a financial award, if you will, as well as access to a host of STEAM activities to use in our classroom. So $5,000 for personal use and then $5,000 for school use as a professional.
Wow. And so that also involves DC activities. What about that?
Yeah, so I literally just got off a plane a little before midnight, so pardon the hair. So I spent over 5 days in Washington, D.C., where we were invited. Probably last week we learned that we will be going on a Lockheed Martin tour, STEM tour, which was fascinating in itself. So that was a perk that I didn't know I would get with this opportunity of a lifetime. And the gala event, a reason to dress in your black tie attire with my family, I should add. So that was really, really exciting to take my family with me.
So, middle school math. That's when I started getting intimidated by math. But I want to know, what made you decide to be a math teacher?
I didn't decide to be a math teacher. That's the truth of the matter. So my degrees are all in mathematics, and I was teaching at the college level, and a student raised their hand, and I said, "Where'd you get that from?" And they said, "My teacher in, I can't remember if it was middle school or high school, I'm getting old." And so whatever they said caused me to reverse my journey and to teach college at night and to apply to teach middle school, well, actually high school calculus. That was my first public school teaching job because that's what I was doing in the university setting. So I switched. I would teach college at night and public schools in the day. Long story short, shout out to Mr. Herbert Brooks, who's still alive, gave me my first opportunity to teach in a middle school almost 28 years ago. So I hope that he can hear my voice very soon and understand that his declaration that mathematics is my mission field couldn't have been farther from the truth.
Okay. So you went to college and studied math. But I understand that when you were a child, you were put in a special ed program because of the color of your skin and your family's socioeconomic status. And now you're an award-winning, winning math teacher. Tell us about that journey.
So let's be fully transparent. And I honored the Ames Tribune highlights of me. I said a lot more than just those two things. So let me clean that up just a little bit. So, yes. Fifth grade, placed in special education, and I am grateful my fifth grade teacher is still alive, Christy Oliver, shout out to you as well, along with her paraprofessional, Floyd Gibson. They noticed that I was really thriving in the mathematics table, the kidney table, I think that's what they call it, where the teacher sits in the middle. And so they said, you have to, Floyd Gibson, actually, Ms. Gibson said, you have to get your mom up here. And so when they pull my report card, straight A's in fourth grade, and no one could explain to my mom why I was placed in special ed. So also the caveat to all of this journey, not even accepted in gifted education as well. You just can't be from poverty, low socioeconomic status. Sweet Home, Arkansas, shout out to that great place. As my son put out, it still doesn't have a library. I hope to change that someday, but it has a lot of great history and rich culture. So I am the first in my family to graduate from college. and I like to articulate it this way, I got an opportunity to change the entire trajectory of my family. And I'm happy to tell you, everyone in my immediate family, except for my father, who's still alive, shout out to him as well. I know a lot of shout outs there. But I love my family, and it was not easy, or is not easy, being the first. I became the Sallie Mae First Year Teacher of the Year because, go back to Mr. Herbert Brooks, my passion as an impoverished African-American girl, if you will, understanding that I had a duty and a responsibility to make sure that those student learners from that community had an opportunity. So my first public school, middle school teaching job was where I went to school as a student as well. So I got a chance to get in there and really do my why.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm from Fresno, California, and the school districts in the Central Valley of California were accused in the 1970s, and rightly so, the data proved out, of putting Hispanic kids, just blanket, into special ed. Language, low socioeconomic status, out-and-out racism, whatever you want to call it. And so your story is one that unfortunately I heard too often where I came from. Now, as a society and as a school district, Ms. Adams, what are we getting wrong and what are we getting right with our efforts at increasing diversity, equity, and inclusion?
So I know some listeners are going to say, you called her Ms. Adams, Williams, okay? I'm a teacher. We're trying to listen, right?
Right.
So one of those great moments I will say to you is that we get it right when we do the following. When we put in our classrooms and in our programmatic activities, whether it be in school, after school, during lunch, things that I've done, when you put in place who's identified as gifted, special education, integrated services, alternative learning placement, and just your general ed student, put us all in that space and watch the learning thrive, watch the momentum of teaching and learning take place. And I embrace that. That's something that I do daily. And so the Trailblazing STEM Award, it just continues the work that I was already doing, mm-hmm. if you will. So it doesn't diminish anyone. It actually uplifts. And so I've been in this community of Ames, Iowa for 12 years. I didn't just start doing it. And so for students and learners and teachers and to just understand that, hey, you belong in this space, and that makes that case for diversity, equity, and inclusion. So if a space is all same or homogeneous, something's wrong. And so I try to shake that up on a daily basis. I eagerly wake up every morning excited to come to work because I get an opportunity to shape the mathematical content. And there are people who struggle because how can you give my child mathematics? And so that comes out in that child's learning, right? And I have to defy that.
Now, how do you get kids excited about math on a daily basis?
So, you know, I like to think I have this alter ego. I sometimes go home so exhausted, and I can't tell you what I did, but I've probably flown around this classroom, right? And I am in my classroom right now. But students tell me, even 28 years later, you're doing it the same way you did it then. Man, I want to be in your class again. So really seeing that learner, and the minute they tell me something, I'm gone. In the sense of executing to make it be palatable, make it be real, make it be a connection. And also to my strengths, activator, achiever, learner, intellectual, right? So I'm using all my own strengths, and it's so rapid, it blows my mind. So I have to sit back and say, whoa, what just happened? And if it's really something that tugs at my heart, I will be honest with you, I'll cry. Recently, a student told me I was boring. Why'd they tell me that? You know, I'm boring, not quite, right? So that means you go home and you strategize of what is it about that learner. So I'm learning every day and executing that learning and modeling what I'm looking for. Asking students challenging questions. I was away all last week for the award ceremony in D.C., which was held on Wednesday. You all could see that on newspaper or social media. One of the beautiful things about that journey is my email was going off every single day. I had to resist virtually coming into the classroom from the White House, if you will, is what I felt like doing, because I was like, no, I have to stay present. But I got emails and I responded sometimes, you know, instantaneous, like, I appreciate you. I'll see you Monday, and bringing gifts in, honestly, and to get here this morning, I left a suitcase accidentally by the door with all the goodies for my students. I mean, can you imagine, like, the teacher forgot the space shuttle stuff in her suitcase? So I've got to make a dash back home and come back by 7:45 because I promised them this award is for them. It's not for me. And I meant that, right? And so I'm happy with the rest of the world seeing what I've been doing. It shouldn't take so long sometimes in education for us to validate those who are in the trenches. And so this award is for every educator that does it every single day, that doesn't get an opportunity to be on a big national stage. And I know my time is running out, which I am grateful for the opportunity. So I'll close with this great statement that I feel in my soul. The work continues, right? And how does it continue? Immediately after getting off that stage, new relationships were created. It was a line of people hugging me, crying with me. I did good. I didn't cry when I gave my acceptance speech. But the minute I went back to my family and to a student learner who was sitting adjacent to me. So when I went and I was in my element talking to the student about what she said in her acceptance speech, because students got awards as well. And scholarships, excuse me, they got scholarships, right, for tuition. So I was talking to the student and then I realized, whoa, there are people back there, you know, like came out of my space. And then it's like, you see to your right, and it was a long line. It did not stop for long moments, and just having those one-on-one connections. So I hope to bring those individuals or those synergistic collaborations to the Ames community and to the broader world.
Okay, well, in the 2 minutes or so that we have left, I want to ask one more question about kids and your relationship to them. Now, you've talked about how you work your style in the classroom. I think I get that. Sounds a lot more fun than my middle school math teacher. But middle school is a tough time for kids. I mean, they're going through so much. Their bodies are changing. Their minds are changing. What is it that drew you to middle school in particular? And are there techniques that work more with middle schoolers than with other kids?
I'm hesitant to say this, so I'll be transparent. Middle school chose me. If you go back to what I said at the onset, I applied to teach calculus at the high school, right? Mm-hmm. Got that job. It was a teacher that was on medical leave, and Herbert Brooks felt that I would be a great fit going back to the community of Fuller Junior High School, where I was once a teacher.
Student.
And so going back to my why, going back to what I had already been. And so he said to me these words when I got Sallie Mae, first year teacher of the year. He said, you took children that no one thought would do algebra, and you gave them algebra skills and beyond. So 28 years ago, I laid this sort of like template of how middle school mathematics should be taught. Mm-hmm. It should always have algebra content. Yes, you embrace arithmetic, but you're delving into algebra. So that is something I do here in our Ames Middle School Alternative Learning Program.
Okay. Well, listen, Ms. Williams, thank you so much for being our guest, literally a few hours off the plane. And congratulations again on your award. And I hope the kids love the things that you bring to the classroom from D.C. this week.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. Good day.
Good day to you. All right. Well, is our next guest Eric Schmidt. Good morning, Eric.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good. Well, what a great honor for the Ames Community School District to have a teacher like Katrina Williams.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, how great is Katrina? She is such a blessing to our school district. And honestly, even more importantly, she's very much a blessing to the students that she impacts. Katrina and I, you know, our paths cross, you know, have crossed over the years, and I've had a chance to see Katrina in action with students. And I didn't catch all of the interview, but one of the things that I've noticed from Katrina is how really students respond to her in the classroom. I mean, they just really engage with the work that she is doing, and it's really magical, honestly, to see live in the classroom.
Yeah, after interviewing her, I can see that kids